True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
I've been working with a nurse dietitian for the last 6 months, and it's been life-changing. I've lost weight, healed my relationship with food, and have way more energy. Working with a dietitian online to create a personalized nutrition plan was so easy thanks to Nourish. The best part? I pay $0 out of pocket because Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans. 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So, you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
3.7 to go. Everybody runs down the floor. James, long pass down the floor. Cryer tips it. Loose. Knipple has it. Throws to Proctor. Heaves up a three. No good. Houston from behind, 14 down to the national championship game. And for the first time since 1984, Houston will play for a men's basketball national championship. It's Houston and Florida in San Antonio on Monday night.
And it's been building to this for a while now. The Cougs had made six straight Sweet 16s. They've been one of the most consistent teams in college basketball the last few years. Amidst all that, they changed conferences. Doesn't matter. They go to the Big 12 and they dominate it this year like they dominated the AAC. But that they did it against Duke, exacting revenge over the team that was gifted a Jamal Shedd injury last year to knock the Cougs out. So they got their revenge there. But they did it in a way that's going to sting for a long, long time. And now with this Duke team, Seth, that was the only crack that some of these guys are going to get at it. You know, like Cooper Flagg's going to go to the NBA. Yeah. Knipple is supposed to be a lottery pick as well. Like, they've got two or three guys on that team that are thought to be NBA first rounders. And I loved when they flashed over to Cooper Flagg's parents. And they're like, oh,
yeah. Remember, that's all they care about, according to the one announcer.
Is the results of the game.
They don't care whether his knee is shredded on any given night. They only care about the results of the game. This is what I have to tell you, everybody. Before you mentally move on to Florida, quick turnaround, obviously. Yeah. But you got to bask in this victory. This seemingly impossible victory for so much of the evening. Bask in it and know that when you go to a place like Duke, It's not that you just lose in the Final Four. It's that you're cast off into a realm of the least favored child or sibling or whatever. You end up for all of eternity when you go to alumni events and what have you. You're the kid that people kept locked in the basement or in the attic that nobody knew about because they're so ashamed of their child. Yeah.
Yes.
We had a kid in school from it's that high school that's really good at football in San Francisco, that area.
Concord De La Salle.
Yeah, De La Salle.
Yeah, I think it's.
And I remember he was from one of the teams that wasn't nationally ranked or didn't win their championship or whatever it was. And he said it was basically like they were lepers. Like nobody wanted to even really acknowledge them when they came back to alumni events or anything. That's what Cooper Flagg is now. He's the guy who couldn't get it done.
He's a leper. Yeah, that's what he is. I always wondered that too. Probably, and you know, it's
no
funny.
No offense to any lepers in the audience.
Right. No, yeah. We've got a lot
but
of.
You know what your deal is. You know what your struggle is.
Yeah. No, we're very popular with lepers. We got
to
be
trying to listen
about
to the radio as your ear is falling off. Yeah.
Ben knows how this feels, not leprosy. But the Miami thing, you know, our producer Ben Gary went to Miami. I would imagine that that might be the biggest dichotomy of any college, like with the guys that were on really good teams versus the guy, like versus these guys from the last 20 years who've never won it, like Andre Johnson and Ed Reed, just shunning guys that played there over the course of the really anything after they were there, Miami. That's yeah, I like that. I like the shunning part of all this.
I think there's probably a lot of classical, like, wow, you know whose team wouldn't have choked in that moment, yeah. Coach K.
Right, right.
You know, it's like, all right, Shire's all great and all and everything, but boy, Coach K's team wouldn't have done that.
Okay, so I didn't get to watch the game live. I watched the last 2 minutes of it. I had an event on Saturday, but I watched the last 14 minutes of the game last 10 minutes. I've watched from the Cougs going down 14 because that was the biggest deficit of the game. Mm-hmm. And I watched the entire rest of the game. And this is what I'm curious about from Cougs, because knowing what the outcome of the game was, I'm obviously watching it through a different prism. So I was watching it, Seth, through the prism of, okay, at what point, if I were a Coug fan, did I feel like, all right, this is over. You know, it's been a great season. And we made it to the Final Four, and we're going to look back fondly at this team. And good job, Kelvin Sampson. And maybe you get over the hump next year with all these hotshot recruits you got coming in. For me, I felt like when Cooper Flagg hit that three to go up 9, I think it put him up like 62 to 53 or 64 to 55, something like that.
Yeah, with 2 minutes and 6 seconds remaining.
Is that what it was? It was with like around 3 minutes, and then the Cougs had a possession after that where. Yeah. They got multiple cracks at it. They got two or three offensive rebounds and were able to get a basket with about 2 minutes to go in the game. But when Cooper Flagg hit that three and there's a stoppage and he's celebrating and they're showing the Duke sideline going crazy, that's the point where I'm in rewatching this, knowing what the outcome was. That was the point in the game for me where, like, holy crap, they came back from this. This is incredible. Like, this,
they were coming at one point. They were 7 for the Cougs were 7 for 8 there in the second half. Then Duke plays such a tenacious defense, and Cooper Flagg had some great defensive plays in this game. I'm not gonna lie to you, Sean. My dauber was down.
Yes,
I didn't really see an avenue other than a flurry of threes or something that they were gonna be able to pull that off.
Yeah, and they needed some threes in there, but they did. A lot of it was just grit. You know, a lot of it was getting second shots. Obviously, at the end, where you force the Emmanuel Sharpe three, and then forcing a turnover with, you know, 20 seconds left or whatever it was, and not just forcing a turnover, but Wilson goes out there, chunks up a three, misses it, but you get the stick back from Tugler. You know, the dunk on the rebound there. It was just great, man. I thought the coolest thing about that comeback, two things: one, it was against Duke, and two, it was emblematic of what this team was all year. They did it with a combination of what they were all year, which was their three-point shooters knocking down big shots and showing just incredible, tremendous amounts of grit at both ends of the floor.
Well, and I think for a lot of people pointing out the positives for the Cougs before the game, it felt like almost every single one of them played out. And the fact that the Blue Devils, they hadn't been in a one-possession game since November 26th. When they lost to the Jayhawks. So, I mean, kudos to them. Their dominance, you know, prevented them from being in any situation like this. But they also just hadn't faced a really good defense this calendar year.
Yeah.
So that's where, if you're holding out hope, you could, going into the latter minutes of that second half, you could still look at some of your pregame bullet points and say, all right, Duke still hasn't been in a situation where if Houston can just get back into one or two possessions, Duke hasn't been in these situations a lot. And that Cooper Flagg had struggled back in 2024, the end of this last calendar year. Like, he'd struggle in the final possessions of both their loss to Kentucky and Kansas. Mm-hmm. But that was back in November.
Yeah.
So it was, are you going to be able to get the worst out of Cooper Flagg? Are you going to be able to put Duke into a situation that they just really haven't been in a lot this year? And lo and behold, once you get him into that situation, you're able to take advantage of the fact that Houston's been in these spots before.
That was what was interesting, is that when they were up six with about a minute to go, and the announcers on the game, you know, Ian Eagle and Bill Raftery and Grant Hill. And kudos to Grant Hill, by the way, whose Duke did not show nearly as much as I think others would have. Like, Grant Hill's a Duke guy. I don't think you would have known it by watching the game. I thought he was very good playing it down the middle. Just I'll make
he
a
was
mention.
He wearing
of that.
His cult undergarments or whatever they make him wear, but right. You couldn't see him.
Wasn't showing. He just knew for his own edification he was wearing them. But when the Cougs cut it to six with about a minute to go, the announcers were like, "Should they be fouling here?" And they didn't. They let it play out. Knipple gets the layup blocked by Tugler. They go back down, and Sharp hits the three to make it a three-point game with 32 seconds to go. And that's a great point, Seth. Man, those numbers you bring up about them the last time they were in a one-possession game, they had a final score that was a one-score final score is absolutely mind-blowing. And the defensive, you know, the last time they played a top 20 defense was in December as well. And that's they looked like a team that hadn't had to inbound the ball in a lot of crucial possessions down the stretch of basketball games. Like even the inbound attempt before the one that got stolen with about 30 seconds to go, Emmanuel Sharp came in and got his hand on the ball. Like the Cougs were all over them for that. They almost got a 5-second violation. Sampson was yelling at the refs like, "Count faster," you know. They thought it was a 5-second violation. So yeah. That sharp three was big because they put some game pressure on them.
It was you got to a point where it feels like in hindsight almost, oh, this was the rich kids from Duke that couldn't handle adversity.
That's it, man.
And you know what it felt like to me, Sean? In the NFL, a lot of teams really don't do a whole lot of in-season conditioning. You consider practice itself is the conditioning, and you just be sure that you're chasing down the ball and everything, but you don't run wind sprints or anything. And then, but sometimes midway through the season, the head coach will get a burr up his butt about something, and I'm like, that's it, we're doing wind sprints. And you realize, like, oh, I'm not in shape for wind sprints. I might be in shape to play football, but I'm not in shape for running 100 yards, 10 yards, or so, 10 times or something. And it's kind of a blow to your system. It felt like Duke, all of a sudden, they had to run suicides, you know? And they weren't ready for it. They hadn't run suicides since November, and they just flat out weren't ready for it.
Well, we know, I mean, Kelvin Sampson's practices are legendary. The video surfacing over the weekend of the drill that he does, where he basically rolls the ball out, has two guys chase it. Like, it's a... I mean, it looks like a basketball version of the Oklahoma drill, but with a ball in there. You know what I mean? Like, it's he's tough on them, man. But he's really good at finding, I think, the right kind of kids that respond to that type of coaching.
Yeah,
and it showed up in the last couple minutes of that game on Saturday.
I think there's a blue collar appeal to the Rockets, and it showed in the. You know, you look at that one map that we looked at last week that showed 86% of states or Americans are pulling for University of Houston, whether they were in their bracket or not, that they are the emotional favorite going into this game. And I think there's a lot of anti-NIL type sentiment. There's a lot of old school appeal, starting with Kelvin Sampson, but then the types of players that he recruits that I think it's appealing to America. It's nice to go into this game. I'm assuming that the majority of America wants Houston in this game.
I would guess.
You know, if you separate gambling and brackets from it.
I would guess that's the case. And you know, they're kind of an everyman vibe too, at least based on the small sample size of panning to the crowd towards the end of that game. They're panning around the Duke crowd, and obviously the Duke crowd is either looking forlorn, sad, or nervous, whatever it may be. But it was a lot of, like, rugby shirt wearing, champagne sipping, clearly, like, Southern private school student body type stuff. They pan over to the Cougs crowd at the end of the game after the Cougs take the lead. Guys are shirtless. You know, there's stuff getting tossed up in the air. I'm like, that's my squad. That's my city right there.
That's all my brother's old theory about wrestlers, because he was an amateur wrestler. Mm-hmm. My brother was a very, very good amateur wrestler. Mm-hmm. And his theory is always that there's a reason that rich kids don't tend to do that well in wrestling. It's because when they lose a tournament, they can go home and play all their video games and everything. But when you're a poor kid and you lose, you got nothing to do. You go home and you just think about it for the next 3 days.
Yes,
and it just sucks.
Yes.
So they feel it more. Yeah,
good.
I feel like we're the Duke, the wine and cheese eaters, and they can go. They've got some party they have to go to the next afternoon. Yeah, they got to go screw some pension fund over on Monday. Yeah.
Meanwhile, the Cougs fans, they're either shirtless or they've got like no shirt on underneath, like Cougs colored overalls. But one of the latches is off and the shoulder's hanging out. And they're banging two beers together like Stone Cold Steve Austin. yeah. pouring them into their mouths. Like, that's our squad right
there.
The
grittiness there.
Yes, yes. Oh, this is a good one. So I asked the question, when did you feel it was over if you're a Cougar? If you did, maybe you, like the team and Kelvin Sampson himself, had faith that this thing was going to turn around at some point. But make no mistake, their percentage chance of winning by conventional win probability hovered around 1% to 3% for almost the entire second half of that basketball game. So certainly from about 10 minutes, the 10-minute mark on, when they were down by 14. This is a good one. Someone says, for me, it was the JoJo Tugler technical foul for reaching across with the inbounder and knocking the ball out of the inbounder's hand where you got called for the technical. It was a 5-point game. I forget. It was under 2 minutes for sure. And I forget. It was obviously after a basket because the Duke guys trying to inbound the ball. They were up five, Duke was. Tugler reaches in, knocks the ball out of the inbounder's hand, automatic technical foul. They get a shot, and now you're up six. Yeah, because that just felt that – it felt like a silly error too, you know. At the time, that's a good one.
Well, Cooper Flagg's foul. I mean, you can complain and whine about it all you want, but he was boxed out. He went over the back. It was a foul. Should you call that in that moment? I don't know. Don't commit the foul. All right. It was plain as day. If you don't want that foul called, don't commit the foul.
Yep. Rugby shirt wearing, champagne drinking, Rudy Poo candy asses. I love that. Good reference to The Rock in 1999. Kelvin Sampson calls them the Mudbloods. Does he really? I like that name.
Yeah.
The Mudbloods? That's good. I didn't know that. I pray to Pope Zaza and Rudy T. I never gave up on them, somebody says. A lot of people saying the technical foul on JoJo Tugler on the inbound play is when they kind of said, all right, this just isn't happening. But it happened.
That reminds me, by the way, I know that that Mudblood is a Harry Potter reference, but that's another one that I've never actually fully watched an entire Harry Potter movie.
I watched one, and it's because my kids wanted to go.
I feel like we need to educate ourselves on Harry Potter stuff just because there's an entire generation of kids that use those references all the time.
How many movies do we have to watch to be able to...
I'm guessing if you just watch the one, you know what? Read a wiki page or something. Yeah. That's what we'll do. We'll go through. I just need to know the references.
Yeah.
I watched Draft Day this weekend, so now I'm starting to get. Now I get some of the references.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yeah, I finally understand what people are talking about when they drop some of these names.
Bo Callahan, nobody came to his birthday party, all that. Good. Are we going to get a review this week on Draft Day?
Yeah, we will. Yeah, okay. I gotta grab some sound bites. I went into Draft Day saying, listen, I know I've seen people talk about the unrealistic parts of it, but I don't wanna watch this the way a cop or a lawyer probably watches a lot of movies and they're like, and it like, okay, that's not the way this would do. They would do this or that. I tried to suspend disbelief, but there were some glaring moments where it was impossible. And it started off right off the bat when the GM of the Seahawks tells Kevin Costner that his farm sucks. I like, we're just pretending this is baseball now. Like, what the hell are you talking about? Your farm system sucks.
Okay.
All right.
You don't have to.
But I moved beyond it.
Yeah,
I moved beyond it.
You don't have to give your review right now. I'm looking for, and especially if your review is supported by audio from the movie. I am very excited for this.
I'll like the movie. I thought it was a really good movie. Given all the, as long as you just ignore and try not to well actually every little thing, I'm just like, okay, you know what? All I need to know is that he paid a bunch of draft picks, and now he's got to get those draft picks back. I'm not going to worry too much about the accounting.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask you, because we'll do the full review later this week. But that I wanted to make sure, did I properly hype up the guilty pleasureness of that movie to you?
Yeah, I didn't even feel all that guilty about it, except the scenes in which Diddy was
a part of. Guiltiest.
I'll tell you, my best part, you know what I really liked it? There came a point where I'm kind of going over the trades and everything, and I'm like, well, I mean, a lot of this boils down to, all right, forget about what position a guy plays. Would you trade Ray Lewis for Ryan Leaf? And then lo and behold, Ray Lewis shows up in the movie, and there's a Ryan Leaf reference.
Unbelievable.
I'm like, oh, yes. Sonny Weaver knows what the hell he's doing.
That's it.
My least favorite part? Spoiler alert, everybody.
Yeah.
My least favorite part where I had a hard time suspending disbelief again was in the when they flash forward to the first regular season game,
mm-hmm.
and and you've got the rookie linebacker.
Oh, hyping everybody
breaking
up.
Everybody yeah. down at the beginning of the game before he's ever played a single snap.
Underrated. That's good. Yes. Yeah. That's an underrated, unrealistic moment there. I like that. Okay.
Arian Foster had way more of a crucial role than I realized, because I'd heard that it wasn't a big part in everything, but at least he's a huge part of the plot.
He is a big part of the plot.
And I thought he did really well, playing basically kind of a version of himself, you know? So a running back prospect in the NFL. I thought he did a really good job.
Yeah. Yeah, the character in the movie was a little less interested in things like philosophy and Egypt and, you know, his podcast, but yeah, he was good. He was really good. All right, Seth, last thing before we do acknowledge me. I apologize, we're getting a jillion texts, so I lost it earlier. The texter who called, or who texted in, Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line, the theory on Jose Altuve trying to steal third and getting thrown out by a mile, like trying to steal third while the pitcher was still holding the baseball, that Altuve sacrificed himself. Keep in mind, the Astros are up 9-7 at this point. Josh Hader.
And they were playing really aggressive small ball.
Yeah.
Like Jake Meyers barely made it by
double
the skin
steal.
Of his teeth to home.
Double steal. So they had a two-run lead with one out, Altuve on second, Paredes at the plate with two strikes, and Altuve does this improbable steal that gets thrown out by a mile, and then Paredes just takes strike three right down the middle. There's a texter that had a theory that they were comfortable with the two-run lead at the time, and they didn't want Josh Hader, who was going to come out and pitch the 10th inning either way. There was nobody warming up in the bullpen. This was going to be a two-inning outing for Hader, that they didn't want Hader sitting in the dugout too long in the frigid Minnesota weather, that they were comfortable throwing Hader back out there warm with a two-run lead. Does that theory hold up for you?
That maybe Altuve had a green light and that they were just going to be hyper-aggressive. Yeah. I'm okay with it. I'll go with it.
That would explain the double steal, too, by the way. You know?
And Altuve had been super aggressive on a tag up at third earlier in the game, and it paid off. I'm not – the grand sum total of it with Altuve yesterday was that wasn't – it wasn't – it wasn't so boneheaded. At least it was rooted in aggression. Well, and it wasn't like those times where he forgets that he's stuck between bases or what have you. It was at least an aggressive base running error that I'm not overly concerned about it.
I guess we do need to remind ourselves too. He was on base because he got the game-winning RBI.
Right. You know? Yeah, I don't. I saw on social media people piling on Altuve, and I felt like it just feels a little inappropriate given the fact that he's been your one bright shining spot in the lineup. Through the duration of the season so far, he's done. Even though he had an error on Saturday, a bad error on Saturday in the field. By and large, when it comes to the actual catching of the ball in the outfield, I felt good about him. It's just that transition to throwing that's giving him the hiccups here and there. I know and it came in a victory. This over aggressiveness, but I'm okay with it.
Last text, and then we'll get to acknowledge me. This is in the aftermath of me praising the Cougs and their shirtless grittiness, their beer drinking, beer guzzling grittiness. Nobody tell Sean that he went to Notre Dame. Okay, well, can I get behind the Cougs effort? I'm among the poors, relatively speaking, when it comes to Notre Dame, okay? I don't open the alumni magazine when I get it because it's all people that are curing cancer and just, you know, sold their business and things like that. I'm way more at the U of H end of things than you think.
We got to remember, too, everybody. I'm going to side with the texter on this. Sean is from the state of Connecticut originally, which now the other big college basketball thing you have to look at on this Monday is just more think pieces about how dominant the state of Connecticut has been in college basketball for years and years and years.
That's right. shout out to the women.
You know what you are, Sean?
What am I?
You're like the rich kid that wears dirty tattered jeans and wants to pretend he's a man of the people. You're a limousine liberal. That's what you are. Yeah.
Can I be a kook for today? Can I not be one of those people with the overalls? We got the finals tonight, man. I'm super excited. Let's get to this. Acknowledge me. And we're going to start off with a kook here and acknowledge me. We acknowledge all the big performances from over the weekend. I will say a name. Then Gary will hit that Roman Reigns hotkey in there.
Acknowledge me.
We will acknowledge the big performance. LJ Cryer.
Acknowledge me.
A lot of Cougs to give love to in the aftermath of that comeback win over Duke. But LJ Cryer, his 6-for-9 from 3-point line, he kept the Cougs in striking distance in this game. He was great. if the Cougs win tonight, there's a good chance he's going to be the most outstanding player from the Final Four. Here was Kelvin Sampson when asked about L.J. Cryer.
We kept matchup hunting with him. You know, Proctor is a great defensive guard, Zion James, so we tried to go get somebody else on him. So either he could get the ball. Once he got the ball in the paint, that's where we got offensive rebounds. But, you know, Duke's an outstanding defensive team, and they're an outstanding offensive team. But we felt like if we could keep them around 70, we could score enough to win. We can't score 80 on these guys. They're too good. But we could score 70. I don't even know what the final was. What was it?
70-67.
Well, there you go. There you go.
You've done this before.
There you go.
Yeah, and we had talked about on Friday, keep the game in the 60s, keep the game in the 60s. So yeah, there's a little bit of irony there that Houston was a team that tipped it over into the 70s.
Yep.
Just barely by the skin of their teeth.
Yes.
It did. It felt like a Rocky movie, man. It just, if you can just stay in it until the final round. Just stay in it until the final round.
Yep.
And then you're the team that's been chasing chickens and beating up on frozen meat.
Kind of, yeah. Absolutely.
I said chasing, not choking. All right.
Right. Chasing. Yordan Alvarez.
Acknowledge me.
Let's hit Yordan Alvarez hitting that game-tying home run in the ninth inning last night.
Juan Duran pitched the eighth inning, and now Jackson the ninth. Yordan crushes one all the way back, and we are tied up. Upper tank shot for 44. The Astros down six. Have come back like the Cougars last night at 7-7.
Hi, Poppy. Taking the high heat and getting into the upper tank. That has got to feel good for Yordan. Two pitches, two runs in this inning on the big swing from Yordan.
I was really hoping, Seth, in that 10th inning, that's why it bummed me out when Altuve got thrown out at third. I'm like, oh, we may get to see Yordan again, see if this is real. We didn't get to see him because the Astros, you know, they Twins were able to get out of the 10th inning, but the Astros win the game 9-7. This was great to see. And first pitch, swinging. Right down Main Street, and he took that thing, man, and he deposited that way up in the stands.
Yeah, and is that the moment where everything kind of tips, turns the tide? Maybe. I think, by and large, you expect that at some point Yordan's going to do what Yordan always does, and he's going to be one of the best hitters in baseball. I think the fact that Paredes and Rogers have really started to look like they're coming into their own. Walker with his two home runs the other day. That part is encouraging. You still have Cam Smith kind of waiting to see what he turns into. The biggest thing I'm uncomfortable with right now is just the DiCenzo Cam Smith rotation and the fact that neither of those guys are getting a boatload of steady reps. It feels uncomfortable. I wish they could just devote all their resources to one of those
guys. It feels like the total opposite of what they were saying in spring training, which is these guys need to play every day. And so you're playing this down the middle thing. You're straddling the fence where neither of them are playing every day. You know, you're just, it feels like they're just piecing things together.
Cam's 2-for-16. DiCenzo's hitting 111. At some point, allocate your resources, man.
Yeah. Yeah. So Yordan, who's still only hitting 182 with an OPS of 569 on the year, that's about to go up. This is what we see from Yordan. He hits that home run and now begins a stretch where he'd been hitting the ball a little bit harder of late anyways. But if it's going to start translating into hits, this is really good news for the Astros. He's come up a bunch of times with chances to impact these games that they've lost. And he's been unable to do it, and he's not looked even competitive in the at-bats in doing so. If you're going to start to get competitive at-bats with great contact from Yordan Alvarez, Seth, even the game they lost on Saturday, 6-1, he came up with the bases loaded late in that game with a chance to get the Astros back in it, and he strikes out.
They've been so bad with runners on base.
Yeah.
I mean, so many non-competitive at-bats, not just Yordan, just as a team, that this is a good series.
Yeah.
It's nice to see Correa's hitting. He did it all right yesterday, but he's hitting 125 on the season.
Yeah.
You can't buy a hit at the Dior store, Sean.
No, you cannot.
If they even have a Dior store.
Unavailable.
In Minneapolis, I'm not sure.
Unavailable. They got a gigantic mall. There's got to be one in there, right? You would think. Rockets Houston Rockets.
Acknowledge me!
This will be a quick one because we're going to hit them at the top of the hour. Big wins over OKC and Golden State this weekend. People were clamoring for wins over good teams. You beat the best team in the West by 13. You beat a team that I think everybody thinks is going to be a factor in the postseason, even though they might have to play a play-in game to get into the postseason or to get into the playoffs in Golden State last night.
You didn't just beat Golden State. You made their two most notable players look like absolute clowns.
Yes. You did really all three. Draymond Green had 2 points in the game. Steph Curry had 3 points in the game, and he's been on a run lately. Even Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler, 13 points. He only took 7 shots in the game, which is weird. There were a bunch of guys there. The little curly-haired Podzimski guy is the guy that led them in field goal attempts. It was a weird game. But I think the Rockets forced that on you. You know, they forced, you know, get the ball out of the hands on the guys who can hurt you. They did a really good job of trapping Steph Curry at various times in that game. So they beat a couple good teams. We'll dig into that more at the top of the hour. A couple more acknowledgments that we need to get to. Julio Jones.
Acknowledge me.
He is retiring as one of the greatest receivers in the history of football.
This is a little bit of a surprise just because Julio Jones didn't play in 2024. In my mind, I was like, wait, what? He didn't retire? Okay.
I guess he submitted his papers finally, so he's going to announce it. Here's Julio Jones.
Today I'm announcing my retirement. Started when I was 8 years old, just a kid from Foley, Alabama. It was an amazing ride. I'm making this announcement today because of the city of Atlanta. Thank you, man. I appreciate y'all. It's nothing but love. I'm doing this on 404 day. It was a hell of a ride.
I guess 404 day, because Atlanta is 404 area code. So I guess 404 day would be the time to do that. I was trying to piece that together. Julio Jones finishes his career currently as the 16th all-time leading receiver in terms of yards in the NFL.
Which of the – when we get to 15, 20 years from now – which is the one where you're going to say, which team that Julio Jones played for will you have completely forgotten that he played for? Will it be Tennessee, Tampa, or Philadelphia?
Philadelphia, for sure.
Philadelphia, there was some fanfare surrounding that. I think that part of it, I'll remember Philadelphia because that was okay, him going into that team where there was obviously a lot of ballyhoo around the Eagles.
Yeah.
And it didn't work out. That was a lost season for them in a lot of ways. I won't remember Tampa at all.
Really? Yeah. Tampa, I vaguely remember. Philly, it got erased from my brain. Tennessee, I'll remember easily because Tennessee was celebrating like they were getting the Julio Jones that made it to the Super Bowl in 2016.
Right. Yeah.
And they clearly did not get that version of Julio Jones. So, Julio Jones, 16th all-time leading receiver. Hall of Fame is going to be interesting for Julio Jones. Not that he's not deserving. Not that he's not a great player. It's just the way the Hall of Fame has kind of revamped how they do things. We saw the class they wound up with this year, Seth, because they changed the way they do the voting to try to make it more exclusive. They didn't even use up all their available slots this year. And there's still a logjam at receiver. Man, I'm so glad Andre Johnson got in when he did, so we're not having to deal with this. Reggie Wayne and Torrey Holt. Guys like that still not in yet, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it could have gotten really uncomfortable, and it was perfect timing.
Yep.
The Hall of Fame gods were shining, looking down on us. Yes.
Speaking of the Hall of Fame, Dwight Howard and Carmelo Anthony.
Acknowledge me!
They are being named to the Basketball Hall of Fame. Two Rocket legends, Dwight Howard and Carmelo Anthony. Carmelo Anthony in his 10 games he played for the Rockets or whatever. Remember the Carmelo Anthony era in 2019? Or
yeah,
2018?
Carmelo, it was the absolute most brutal version of people just seeing a name and thinking like, yeah, of course, he'll be just as good and do everything that he did in his prime. Yeah. Dwight Howard at least contributed.
He did.
A lot, yeah.
I wanted Carmelo Anthony pretty badly. I thought he'd serve a role on that team, you know, just bring some points off the bench. But he just never really embraced that being off the bench.
This is what I don't like about the Carmelo Anthony era in Houston is that people looked at it as more than it was when he was on a $2 million contract.
Yeah, it was a low-level contract.
Because people had built it up as into more of a thing than it actually was, then they acted like it was Daryl Morey's greatest failure that Carmelo Anthony had been on the team. Like, no, it was a one-year, $2 million contract.
Yeah.
It was a nice little experiment. It wasn't a huge blemish on anything that Daryl Morey had done.
Nope. All right, last one. Alexander Ovechkin.
Acknowledge me.
He broke the all-time scoring record in the NHL over the weekend. 895 goals. Breaks Wayne Gretzky's record. Crazy number. They both scored their goals, Gretzky's 894 and Ovechkin's 895, in the exact same number of games. 1,487 games. That's weird. But here's what it sounded like on the broadcast on TNT.
Here is Ovechkin. Shoots! He scores! He scores! Number 895!
From the top of the left circle, which I guess is his trademark spot. He scored a lot of his goals from there. And Ovechkin on the road in Long Island, against the New York Islanders. It's very weird. They stop the game, which that happens in all sports when a record gets broken. They let whoever broke the big record speak to the crowd. It just felt weird that he was doing that on the road, you know, in front of all the Islander fans. That was kind of strange. Yeah. But congrats to him, man. Congrats to Ovechkin, 895 goals.
This is your little taste. We got to start sprinkling hockey in every now and then in advance of the city potentially getting a hockey team.
That's true. Yeah. So for those of you who are excited about getting a hockey team but know nothing about hockey, Alexander Ovechkin, he is the all-time leading goal scorer as of yesterday in hockey, 895 goals. There you go. All right.
At some point, the Houston franchise will sign Ovechkin 7 years from now, and we'll get all excited that he's there on a one-year, $1.5 million contract, and then we'll be crestfallen when it doesn't work out because he's old.
But we'll all travel to the Hockey Hall of Fame for his induction like he's one of our own, kind of thing.
Yeah.
All-time Houston, whatever they are. All right, that's Acknowledge Me, acknowledging all the big performances from the weekend. All right, little football. We have not talked much football yet on the show. Mock draft injection time. And I found one where I don't think that this player has been selected by the Texans in any of the mocks that we've done so far. How would you feel if these guys were still on the board and the Texans went with this position player? We'll have the mock draft injection for you. Chad Reuter, NFL.com's mock draft, coming up next.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at bragworthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, mock draft injection time. We've not talked any football yet on the show today. Let's mix some in here with our latest mock draft injection. We only get, probably like 9 or 10 more of these. Draft is, night one is April 24th, Thursday. We got you covered all weekend long for the NFL draft when it's here in a couple of weeks. We do this each and every day at around 7:45. We take a mock draft from one of the experts out there and dig in and see if we would enjoy the world in which this mock drafter lives in. This one, Seth, is Chad Reuter, who is best known for giving really easy report card grades to teams and coaches for things like free agency, draft, whatever the case may be.
Yeah, he got all of his draft grades they range from A+ to B-.
Yes.
He is the most cognizant of the fact that he works for the league itself.
Yes.
You can tell he always feels like he's one text away from losing his job if he pisses off a GM or something. Yes.
I love it.
I admire him for that.
Yeah.
He's a company man and he owns it, damn it.
That's right. That's right. All right. So he's got a 5-round mock draft. Well, I wonder what that's like to sit down and does he let AI do it? You're not getting anything right or wrong.
You know what? Honestly, a lot of these draft types, I think they really enjoy doing the super long mock drafts because they got to really spend time and think about the team needs and everything.
Yeah.
A lot of our listeners do 7-round mock drafts and what have you. It's a fun rabbit hole to get into.
My son does them on, might be Pro Football Focus. James does them with his buddies. They're each repping their own team and plus a few others. Yeah, they like doing them, man. All right, so let's get to this here. With the 25th overall pick in the Chad Reuter NFL.com mock draft, the Houston Texans select. Okay, Derek Harmon, defensive tackle out of Oregon. I think this is the first Derek Harmon mock that we've had, Seth.
Yeah.
And here's
go ahead.
No, just here's the. We'll get your breakdown of Derek Harmon here. Matthew Golden is still on the board, and they took Derek Harmon. I would be very frustrated on draft night if that were the case. Just pointing that out.
With Derek Harmon, he's not as tall as Eric Armstead, but he feels like that type of a player.
Okay.
Where I bring up Eric Armstead because the Texans tried to trade for Eric Armstead a couple years ago with Malik Collins, and it didn't work out. And even though the Texans have signed Sheldon Rankins back into the fold, and you feel like, okay, they've got guys that they feel okay with starting, I think D'Amico still has an eye towards finding a difference maker at defensive tackle. And Derek Harmon, like Eric Armstead, isn't going to be a guy that you expect to be in double-digit sacks a whole bunch, but he can play the run, he's long, he's physical, he uses his hands well, that D'Amico, especially with a 25th pick, might feel really, really comfortable with somebody like him. He's a different type of player than like Walter Nolan. I think Walter Nolan is gone by this point in this draft, who's a bit of a twitchier defensive tackle. Mm-hmm. So this wouldn't surprise me, but I think I'm like most Texans fans where I feel like, all right, please itch me where I've got the biggest scratch, and that's at interior offensive line and at wide receiver.
Correct.
Right now.
Yep.
Yeah.
Walter Nolan.
I wouldn't be upset with this. I think it would make sense, but I just, the instant gratification in me wants an offensive lineman or a wide receiver, mm-hmm. especially Matthew Golden, who I've fallen in love with.
If Matthew Golden's on the board, this will be, the prism I look at it through, Seth. What will the reaction be at the draft party if they take a defensive tackle with the needs on the offensive line and with a name wide receiver sitting there at 25 also? I think that D'Amico and Nick are probably at the point here where they're above getting booed at the draft party for a pick like this. To your point, he's a good player. And this too, if you take a defensive tackle, I feel really good that the bust factor on a defensive lineman drafted by D'Amico Ryans is at all high. Like the bust factor feels very low for a guy getting drafted at that position by the Texans. By the way, Nolan goes with the very next pick to the Eagles, who make a trade up to go get him.
That actually makes sense to me, that if D'Amico had to choose between Derek Harmon and Walter Nolan, I know that a lot of people think, well, he wants penetrating defensive linemen. I think he wants more than just that. I think for your penetrating defensive lineman, D'Amico's totally fine moving defensive ends down into defensive tackle in situations when you want to get athleticism and speed there. I think he wants a guy that you feel good about being all three. You can stop the run on first down. You can rush the passer on third down. And I think Derek Harmon fits that bill more. It's the Matthew Golden part that I would feel a little bit left out.
Yeah, dude, if it's 25 and Golden is still on the board right there, the anticipation during that 10 minutes leading up to the pick for me is going to be very tense. Very tense. They need a wide receiver. With the 58th overall selection, the Houston Texans select in the Chad Reuter NFL.com five-round mockeroo, Charles Grant, offensive lineman, William & Mary. And as we point out, anytime somebody is drafted from an FCS school or even a group of five schools, Seth, or group of however many conferences it is now that aren't a power conference, this would be out of character for the Nick Caserio era. Drafting, yeah. This is more of a Julion Davenport kind of pick right here.
And he's the classic, a guy from a smaller school, so hasn't faced the same level of competition. But you also look at him as a little bit of a physical project, that he's lankier. And I feel like we already have one of those guys in Blake Fisher. I think that Blake Fisher is a lankier guy that's shown some promise and that you want to just see him grow into his grown man body and learn how to play as a taller guy. And I think he's making good progress in that. So my appetite for having another, like a younger Blake Fisher on the team, I like it for the long term, but it doesn't reward my id as much as I want.
No, that's a good way to put it. That's not a needle mover for me. I'll wait and see. And it's hard to imagine that guy getting on the field and contributing if you're coming from William & Mary. But I don't know. I haven't watched any of his film. He is, I believe, he was one of the guys who's visited the Texans on a 30 visit. So he's on their radar right now. We'll just rattle through these other ones quickly. 79th overall pick, Texan select in the Chad Reuter mock draft, Jeffrey Bassa, linebacker from Oregon.
We've already got a linebacker from Oregon on the team who's a developmental project.
Jamal Hill, yep.
Yeah. I'm intrigued by Jamal Hill. Let's wait and see what happens with Jamal Hill.
89th overall pick, Houston Texan select, Savion Williams, wide receiver, TCU. Not the first time we've seen him drafted to the Texans when we go with the multi-round mock. And with the 177th overall pick, that is a fifth-round pick, Houston Texans select Taj Brooks, running back, Texas Tech. Guns up. Am I allowed to do that? That's a Red Raiders thing. Guns up. So I do think they're going to take a running back in this draft at some point. It gets more interesting if they use one of those top 89, you know, those four picks in the top 89 on a running back. Supposedly a very deep running back class, according to John Harris.
The best thing about running backs is that as soon as you draft one at any point in the draft, you watch the highlights, and there's not a single highlight reel of a running back who gets drafted that doesn't convince you that this guy is like O.J. Simpson, but a law abider.
Yeah.
I like this guy. Yeah.
I was really psyched about Juwan Jordan last year when they took him in the sixth round from Louisville.
Juwan Jordan especially, his highlights, you watch Juwan Jordan highlights and you do see, you're like, okay, all right, this plays really well amongst smaller human beings, but we got to see how this does with large human beings.
I watched probably two Louisville games maybe from that season, but one of them was against Notre Dame. They beat Notre Dame and he ran for like 162 yards. I'm like, oh, they got a steal. They got a steal with this Juwan Jordan, let me tell you. Middle screen texting in on the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. This goes back to us discussing briefly whether Julio Jones is a Hall of Famer. I think you know what's coming, Seth. You can't tell the story of the NFL without Julio Jones.
It's true. Well, you know what? The Julio Jones trade is always fun because it always comes back. Will Anderson's going to be that way too. Will Anderson and Julio Jones had a couple of the most aggressive trades for a non-quarterback first round.
Yeah.
So they almost become a barometer for future trades like that. You heard a lot about the Julio Jones trade and that Will Anderson's was the most aggressive since Julio Jones or as whatever the accounting works out on it.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that. Can't tell the story of aggressive round one trades without Julio Jones or Will Anderson.
In 2011. Here was the trade. I'm looking at it right now. The trade was with the Cleveland Browns. Cleveland traded this pick to Atlanta for Atlanta's first-round pick. So Atlanta moves up from 27 to 6, and they gave up a second-rounder, a fourth-rounder, and then a first and a fourth in 2012. That's actually very similar to what the Texans gave up. The Texans gave up a 2, and some fodder, and then a one the next year and some fodder to move up far fewer spots. They moved up from 12 to 3. Atlanta moved all the way up from 27 to 6. Yeah. To get Julio Jones. That's wild.
You know, in watching draft day for the first time this weekend in its entirety, the one thing about where I kept telling myself, like, all right, don't overanalyze this, whatever. The picks are the picks. And the part that rang true that I'm glad that we in Houston don't have to worry about is that, all right, the GM, Kevin Costner, made this aggressive trade because he was feeling desperate because the owner had basically forced him into it.
Yeah.
Like, that's a real enough sentiment that you feel and you worry about as an NFL fan. Is the crazy owner from the Browns gonna make my GM do something stupid? I don't worry about the actual picks or anything. I don't worry about that with Cal McNair and Hannah McNair. I don't feel like they're gonna at any point force Nick Caserio or D'Amico Ryans into making a ridiculously absurd trade.
I agree with that.
For a player that they haven't researched fully.
All right, we made the trade. Now let's go do the work, fellas.
Let's go find out if there's any reason we shouldn't have made this absurdly aggressive trade.
When's the draft? In 10 hours, you know?
Well, that's the other thing I kept telling myself, and I knew this from just having seen people talk about draft day. If you imagine that it's an entire offseason compressed into 12 hours, then it makes more sense, too.
Yeah.
A lot of these stories, like that, what's his name, the linebacker?
Vontae Mack,
yeah. That, okay... Oh yeah, Vontae Mack had handed the football player to his sister who died of cancer six months later.
Yeah.
That people would have known that story and it would have been talked about, and he'd been ejected because of it.
Okay.
But yeah, that might have been on First Take a time or two.
Yeah,
Kevin Costner wouldn't be divulging this information to everybody for the first time on draft morning.
Oh my God.
But I let it all go. It was all right. We've compressed 6 months into 12 hours.
Cannibalize your review of this movie for later this week, please.
Okay.
Although I am enjoying, these are little breadcrumbs that you're giving out. I'm enjoying these teases. Some of this stuff I'm forgetting about. I'm like, oh my God, that was absurd. And that was absurd.
The thing that bothered me the most was Vontae Mack's brass knuckles phone holder.
Yeah, you didn't like that?
I didn't like it just because it was so obvious, like what the filmmakers were trying to do.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, oh wait, does this guy have too much of an edge?
Yeah.
What's the deal with this guy?
I love that. All right, the Rockets are likely going to be the number two seed, which makes for a very, very fun week of scoreboard watching. We'll get to that. We'll hit the Cougs in the 8 o'clock hour as well. A lot of basketball talk on the show today. Stay there. You're listening to Payne and Pendergast.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House of the Home Theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.